Welcome to the Displacement Urbanism podcast series, hosted through the London School of Economics. My name is Dr. Romola Sanyal, and I am Associate Professor in Urban Geography at the Department of Geography and Environment here at the LSE. In this podcast series, we explore how cities and displacement co-constitute each other. As we see millions of displaced people moving to cities and millions of people displaced in cities around the world, the questions of how these processes intersect are crucial. In this podcast, I will be interviewing a range of actors, including those who have been displaced in different ways and those who are involved in the management and the study of displacement. We will be going around the world to explore the different issues around this topic. I hope the podcast offers an opportunity to open up conversations around the politics and processes of displacement and urbanization, the different ways it can be experienced, understood, and approached. I also hope that the podcast demonstrates how these are global and interconnected issues, but also one that draws our attention to its local specificities. Welcome, everybody, to today's episode of Displacement Urbanism. Our episode today is titled Forced Migration and Urbanization in a Fragile Context, a discussion on Somalia. I'm delighted to introduce our speaker for today, Teresa del Ministro, who is the IOM Displacement and Resilience Senior Program Coordinator. She is a development professional with over 15 years of experience in the areas of human mobility, internal displacement, durable solutions, peace building, land governance, and urban development. Prior to joining IOM Somalia, Teresa has worked with a variety of UN, NGO, and private sector entities in Kenya, the United States, Somalia, the United Kingdom, Uganda, France, Ireland, and Algeria. Teresa holds a master's degree in conflict studies from the London School of Economics and Political Science, and one in development studies from the University of Bologna. Welcome to the podcast, Teresa.
Thank you, Romola. Pleasure to be here.
So you've been doing all this really interesting work in different parts of the world, and you are now located in Somalia working with IOM. And from my discussions with you, it seems like it's been a very complex environment with a lot of displacement, particularly internal displacement. So I wanted to just start our conversation today with just talking to you about that and asking you what you think the key drivers of internal displacement are in Somalia.
I'm privileged because this is my second time in Somalia, actually. So I started to work in Somalia in 2015 in various capacities, and then I've only come back to the region last year. So it has been interesting to look at important trends. And I can tell you that over the past 10 years, like, internal displacement in Somalia has more than tripled. And another important trend is that while this process of displacement has been on the rise, sadly, multidimensional poverty has been stagnant, like affecting 70 to 77% of the population. This is significant because basically I think the problem of resolving internal displacement in Somalia has to engage also with the broader development question of how people can escape the poverty trap. So Somalia is a very fast urbanizing country, but this urbanization has largely been driven by internal displacement. So we don't see in cities in Somalia the typical benefits of urbanization yet. And displacement in Somalia tends to be large scale, protracted, and urbanized. So there is an estimated 3.1 million internally displaced persons now, and 2/3 live in cities. And the drivers of conflict are complex. So typically, data outlets have been looking at conflict and climate change, right? But this all has happened against the backdrop of a conflict that is still ongoing and issues with the process of state building and reconstruction. So interestingly, we are now shifting. So IOM was privileged to support the federal government of Somalia in developing a data tool. It's called the Durable Solutions Progress Survey, that instead of discounting people in displacement, also tries to understand how they compare with host communities And basically, what's their progress towards solutions? And we've done so with with the support and leadership of the Dhanbada Consortium and funding by another joint program that we lead called Samayenta. What do we know from these surveys? That basically displacement is a vulnerability driver because IDPs are 35% worse off than host communities. But even when equality between IDPs and hosts is achieved, these categories largely remain affected by poverty. So a solutions approach really needs to include strategies that look at reducing inequalities also with those that live above the poverty line. And when we look at displacement in Somalia, basically addressing protracted displacement in urban areas is the bulk of what we do. But there's also a consideration of prevention that needs to be factored in. So preventing displacement from rural area, understanding the vulnerabilities of populations that tend to be the ones that displace into cities is equally urgent. This is basically the overview of the situation. I will perhaps also mention an important trend that is the secondary and tertiary displacement that is induced by forced evictions and by land development projects. So these are very prevalent in Somalia in environments like Mogadishu, and it's due to a variety of factors. The civil war has destroyed administrative records, including their land registries that have been either looted or lost. And so this creates huge problems in terms of city expansion, in terms of land tenure security. And so to give you just an indicative figure, the Norwegian Refugee Council has been tracking forced evictions since 2015, and from 2017 onwards, they've created a dashboard. So only from 2017 to 2024, close to 2 million people have been forcibly evicted, and the majority of them are of course, internally displaced persons. And this is due to a combination of factors that looks on the one hand at weak land tenure systems, weak mechanisms for redressal, and weak protections, combined with the fact that land remains one of the few assets that people can invest on as the economy hasn't diversified enough. So it's about one of the few things people can invest on that has a return on investment.
That's a really fascinating overview, and clearly there's a lot of different issues in it. And I'm really quite struck by the number of people you talked about that were being evicted. And I wanted to ask you, what do they hope would be a way to address their displacement? So what are some of the solutions or some of the approaches that people want, you know, to address their vulnerabilities that emerge out of the displacement that they're facing?
For the past 10 years, like the proportion of IDPs that participate in our surveys tends to say that the preferred solutions is to remain in the location where they have displaced, which tends to be an urban center where it's possible to at least receive a minimum level of security, and where service providers are present. However, this doesn't mean having found a durable solution. Okay, with the Durable Solutions Progress Survey, one of the findings is that the protracted displacement doesn't have a statistically significant association with a greater feeling of integration. So this is significant, and we've also started to observe a trend that is quite new and emerging, but among the people affected by conflict that have displaced because of conflict in certain locations, well, their preference would be to go back to the areas of origin. And in some cases, they're the majority of the caseload of the people in that area that were displaced by conflict. So this is quite new, definitely. And it's telling. It's telling of the challenges that cities reintegrating their own people. So let me talk about these challenges for a moment. So one of the main barriers I think that the IDPs face has been that we've documented is unemployment. So lack of livelihood is really particularly urgent as a priority. And this also is combined with an inability overall of cities to produce enough jobs for a huge caseload of semi-skilled and low-skilled laborers. So, and this is also due to the fact that the economy is not expanding fast enough. So this is really important to stress. Other barriers pertain lack of services in certain cases, but more importantly, I think participation, like the participation of IDPs in public affairs is very limited to community-based decisions, mostly settlement or neighborhood level. Only in one federal member state in Somalia did IDPs vote and were elected to local district councils in elections. So this is quite new and quite unique. This said, there are things that have been done by, I think, first and foremost, the government and then also the international community. The approach of the international community typically has been since 2016, since the launch of a thing called the Durable Solutions Initiative, to look to take a three-pronged approach that was supporting simultaneously the strengthening of policy frameworks, the institutionalization across ministries and tiers of government of durable solutions work through interministerial coordination and multi-tiered coordination, and then support to a type of solutions programming that is multi-sectoral, integrated, and ideally should benefit from longer-term funding. So these interventions look at aspects of tenure security, social cohesion, livelihood, service delivery, and I can speak for the organization I'm in at the moment. We lead basically two flagship joint initiatives. One is the Danwadag Consortium, jointly with NSC Concern, Credo, Juba Foundation, and RETS, and another is a UN joint, is a two actually UN joint programs, one called Samayenta with Habitat and UNDP, and one called Asalkafir, or is an internal displacement solutions fund that was set up with the Action Agenda, where we implement jointly with the federal government of Somalia, UNCDF, UNHCR, UNDP and Habitat, interventions that really look at strengthening the coordination capacity and data capacity of the government, among other things. But truly the main driver of changing the solutions landscape in Somalia has been the engagement of the government. So I mentioned the Durable Solutions Initiative, but also the government included Durable Solutions in its National Development Plan for three consecutive editions. They have produced a National Durable Solutions Strategy in 2020. They're working on a draft for now IDP Act. And they have produced a coasted plan that really looks at lifting out of displacement 1 million Somalis. At the local level, the municipal authorities have been at the forefront of providing land for planned and voluntary relocations, but also to look on the legal aspect at the land and urban regulatory frameworks to ensure that urban development happens with levels of social safeguarding that really prevent displacement and ideally support solutions. There are also interesting innovations because the government is now exploring ways to ensure that IDPs can be included in social safety nets, for example. And there are things that have worked really well in terms of providing increased tenure security. Rental subsidy schemes have been quite effective to become self-sustaining in as little as 1 year time for several households. We've also supported and facilitated the creation of long-term leases for settlements, and also the issuance of land deeds. And we observe that when we couple tenure security element with a livelihood intervention, then the proportion of IDPs that likelihood to attain solutions or to be on a pathway towards solutions go from 7% to 25%.
But I was wondering what some of the challenges are on the ground in terms of either implementing the programs or even, you know, how the communities themselves respond to the programs and so forth.
I think I would say right off the bat, the bigger issue we have is to differentiate between the people that we reach and whether this boils down to being a solution. So this is very hard because I think it's a problem for the whole community of practice globally. We haven't yet established clear metrics to define what a solution is when displacement ends. Although there have been many attempts and there are several innovations and initiatives at the global level, I think we've only now started with the DSP and the Durable Solutions Index to see which localities are doing better based on the comparative analysis of hosts and IDPs. And we didn't have this until like last year. So we've done solutions programming for close to 10 years, you know, as a collective. I'm not even talking for my organization, but the work on solutions that really has embraced the work of NGOs, CSO, government, UN has been going on for quite some time, but it was only last year that we started to have metrics that tell us how close people are to reaching a solution. So without this type of North Star, it's very hard to do the sequencing and layering of activities that then deliver solutions. So this has been definitely a challenge. Another challenge is, I think, a challenge that pertains a lot the development work that the government is leading on. So we're still dealing with a fiscal base that is quite small. So the government-led service delivery remains quite small too. And it's work in progress and things will change because the government of Somalia successfully get debt relief and will be able to access IMF loans soon, combined with all the interventions and initiatives to support the economic transformation. We really hope that it will be possible to generate enough revenues for the government to then deliver service to its citizens. But definitely the frequency of a crisis has occurred with a pace that hasn't quite found a match in terms of sustainably led absorption capacity. So now we are working to factor in, you know, projected migration trends into the future, you know, needs for services in certain localities. But then it remains a question of how quickly and how fast can local governments get organized to make sure the services are available to those who need them, and not just the internally displaced persons, but also the impoverished host communities. For solutions, it will be crucial not only to look at this absorption capacity reality, but also the prevention of displacement. Because when we have droughts that can displace up to 1 million people or more at the time, then solutions remains an elusive target.
It's a very particular context, Somalia. And you've obviously worked in several other contexts as well. And given your work in this field for a long time and your sort of current work with IOM, and you seem quite excited by the kind of work that you're doing and hoping that this kind of work will benefit different kinds of people experiencing displacement, I wanted to just ask you as a sort of a closing reflection, what you think the lessons that can be learned from the Somalia experience.
If I were to rule the community of practice for one day, I think it's important to remember how to create an enabling environment for people to really make a choice about their own situation. And this includes also through increasing a focus on prevention of displacement in rural areas. So, in urban areas, I think the work that IUM tends to do, starting from the crisis response, looks at how to plan settlements, basically. And it's interesting because this is more of an approach and a methodology, because here, if done, when it's done well, it can provide authorities with tools, data, SOPs to engage with the communities and then to manage those sites sustainably when the international community is no longer there. But simultaneously, we're looking at very interesting approaches, like our colleagues in community stabilization have taken an approach of environmental peace building to tackle simultaneously the root causes of displacement, so conflict and climate change. So they're looking at getting communities together to do some restorative agriculture intervention or work on flood prevention and mitigation, or resolving basically communal conflicts that relate to the use and management of natural resources and tend to feed into the broader conflict with Al-Shabaab. So these activities are really, really important, because when done in rural areas, they can really support the prevention of displacement. The second thing that I think is necessary across the board is start to exploring human mobility and the rural-urban linkages as a solution. So as one of my economist colleagues says here, urban unemployment is also the result of rural neglect. And so it's really, really important to ensure that the restoration of agricultural value chains puts some attention into working with communities in what used to be productive areas, and that certain structural issues that the markets are facing are really, really tackled to ensure that then the Somali economy can get more value addition and can become more diversified and more competitive. The other part of the work that some colleagues have done on the solutions programming aside looks also at developing ancillary towns and urbanizing towns. So it looks at supporting the capacities of local government and placing strategic services to ensure that people can stay either in those localities or that those localities can start receiving people that want to move from the countryside to those ancillary towns. Another thing, like I think that is very important, is to really work on the employment side by increasing the access of women and youth to financing and to create tools that really support entrepreneurship in a largely informal economy. So services like financial services, financial products that are vital for entrepreneurship should be tailored to really take into account these realities. And yeah, and then I think there is an opportunity in this crisis of official development assistance to support a humanitarian reset that involves more the private sector at all levels. So the government, the Somalia Disaster Management Agency, has taken an initiative, for example, called Reimagining Humanitarian Partnerships, to involve private sector in what is going to be the next humanitarian crisis response. So the conversations are very relevant, not only for the crisis prevention of displacement, but also for the Somali state to become stronger and to continue on this trajectory of state building. The discussions are about the involvement of private sector for safety nets, contribution of the private sector to national funds to support vulnerable Somalis, and the importance of this cannot be understated.
There's a lot of lessons that you've laid out for people in practice, and I really hope that they take some of that on board. I really like the fact that you talked about that rural-urban migration should not really be seen as a problem, but really, you know, be seen either as a solution or as a normal part of how people live and how they manage life and so on. I mean, I think what is really interesting with what you were talking about in the case of Somalia is the fact that that question of displacement is seen through an intersectional lens that it's seen through the lens of livelihoods, through the lens of land tenure, through private sector involvement, through ODA. How do you give people a choice to move between rural and urban areas? So, you know, it shouldn't be a compulsion. If they are moving, it should be a matter of choice. So I think there's a lot of really interesting things there. And I think that it, all of these things that you were talking about in the context of Somalia are very applicable to other places as well.
On the last point of mobility as a solution, I think the one that you just referred to now, I think it's important. We do not have data, and this is where the academia could perhaps support. Like, we have data from the World Bank that indicates that there's a correlation between the increased resilience of herds and pastoralists during drought times and their ability to move in search of, for example, water or pastures. So this is it's somewhat specific, but with climate change, I think it will be very important to not to lose sight of this pattern, right? Because if people can move and move well, if governments can support these processes, there shouldn't be a need for displacement.
Exactly.
That's the point. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, people should be allowed to have the kinds of lives and livelihoods that they want, not ones that are being forced on them or they are compelled to undertake because of structural reasons. So yeah, no, that's a really good point. Thank you so much for your time, Theresa. That was a really interesting discussion, and I wish you the best with your ongoing work in Somalia.
Of course, Romola, thanks for the opportunity.